Hey everyone, welcome to another edition of the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. My name is Brian Dinovellis, and St. John's rise to the top of the Big East Conference is nothing new to Rick Pitino. He's been doing this in year two for as long as he has been coaching in college basketball. He's doing it again, and he has the Johnnies ranked inside the top 10 for the first time in 25 years. Since the end of the 99-2000 season, St. John's resurgence, renaissance has brought the Red Storm into the top 10 at number 9. They've won 10 games in a row, 16 of their past 17 games. And joining me on the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast will be none other than former Johnnies head coach Fran Fraschilla. The Brooklyn native knows what it's like to be at St. John's and coach against St. John's teams when the city is buzzing and the city is behind the Red Storm. He'll offer his perspectives as he joins us once again on the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Plus, what is happening with UConn? We'll break down the Huskies. We'll also talk Rutgers and a lot of bit of Yale. Plus, we'll head into the MAC Conference. The two hottest teams, Sacred Heart and Iona. We'll touch upon them, and we'll do that in just a minute. But first, I want to say thank you to our sponsor, Mike Supa of RE/MAX Revolution. If you're looking to buy, sell, or list a home down the Jersey Shore, we're talking Monmouth and Ocean Counties, give Mike a call at 201-988-2577. Hey, spring is right around the corner, and summer is right around the corner. Great time to look for a home or sell your property. Give Mike a call and tell him that Brian sent you from the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Okay, it is my pleasure to welcome back to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast Fran Fraschilla from ESPN and, of course, Manhattan College, St. John's University. You know him very well, and Coach, it is so glad to have you back on the podcast.
Happy to be back, Brian. It's a good time, Red Storm fan. So if I can add a little color to what is already a great story, I'm happy to help.
So are you surprised that they are this good, that they are the best team in the Big East in what is essentially Rick Pitino's, he's only been there a year and a half on the job?
No. Absolutely not. Rick Pitino, it's interesting because like we kind of are from the same circle, Providence College. You know, I was with Rick Barnes, and I don't know Coach Pitino super well. I mean, I've only had a handful of conversations. He's one of the few people in college basketball that I can honestly say I don't know. We're not best friends. I did some ESPN games when he was at Louisville, but I've been watching Coach Pitino since I was a college kid. And we'll get into that. No, I'm not surprised. He's one of the great coaches of all time. The track record is proven. And I was trying to find a tweet I put out 2 years ago when they hired Rick that I thought they would be. I mean, it's a pipe dream in a way, but realistic because how good a coach he is. I thought they could be in the Sweet 16 in year two. And, it's trending that way. We'll see. Obviously, there's a lot of things that go on left. But he's one of the great coaches of all time. So no, I'm not surprised.
I mean, everywhere he's gone, he's won, right? So when he takes over a program like St. John's that really needed some building, a lot of people said, look at what he's done in, right? Year two at Providence, year two at Kentucky, year two at Louisville. And even in, I think this is more impressive to me because at least in those years, he had players to build upon. Now he had to do it in an NIL era. And yet he had players who came back like Zubi Ejiofor and, of course, R.J. Lewis. But at the same, Brady Dunlap, of course. But still, to me, it's more impressive to do it this way because it's an era of free agency.
Well, it is. And quite honestly, not everybody is handling free agency well, you know, in terms of, you know, coaches and programs. And so, obviously, Rick's doing it well, but see, Rick's the kind of guy that it wouldn't matter what era or what. He's just a great coach. So if you put 10 guys in a gym with him over the course of a few months, whether it's NIL here or playing with freshmen and watching them grow up like he's done so many times with guys like Donovan Mitchell at Louisville, et cetera. He's just going to win wherever, wherever, whatever the situation is and wherever he goes. I think I said once that if you put him at the University of Alaska Anchorage, you would have him in the Sweet 16 in 2 years. And there are just some coaches, only a handful, but there are just a handful of great coaches who just can navigate every era, because ultimately you got to put five guys on the court that know what they're doing. And, Rick is relentless at excellence. And relentless is probably an understatement.
So that's like his defense, right? That's the word that you hear for this team's defense. And listen, I grew up in an era when John Thompson and Hoya Paranoia, they were the best defensive team in the country. And but they had the ultimate defensive enforcer in Patrick Ewing. Okay. Zubi Adjafor is a very good defender. He's not Patrick Ewing. The way this team defends and the way they rotate and close out, man, Coach, how impressive is that in this era when all guys want to do is shoot threes, and yet all this team does is defend, defend, and they can't shoot threes?
Well, first of all, it doesn't like, there's so many things I want to unpack there, Brian. Number one, great basketball coaches, it's not like football where this guy's a great defensive coordinator, great offensive coordinator. I can point out things that Rick has done offensively. I mean, he was the guy that really revolutionized the 3-point shot at Providence,
Bingo. Yeah.
figuring that out before we even had analytics. We didn't even know what I didn't even know analytics. I grew up in Brooklyn, so I didn't even know what analytics meant, but Rick was always he's always been ahead of his time, and defense takes a lot of effort and hard work, heart hustle, and you just don't play for the guy if you don't have those ingredients. I mean, honestly, so this is not a surprise. I think I looked this morning, they're the second ranked Ken Pom defensive efficiency in the country, but that doesn't discount the fact that he's just a great basketball coach on both sides of the ball. Now, what does he wish he had Billy Donovan and Pop Lewis out there shooting threes like the old days, the very, very old days at Providence? Sure. But you dance with who brung you, and this team's got some toughness. It's got some guys that can put the ball in the basket. Lewis is having a great year. We know what Kadari's capable of because we've been watching him forever. By the way, he's from my neighborhood pretty much, and over in that Canarsie Sheepshead Bay section of Flatbush. So no, I just think he's a great coach on both sides, and none of this is really a surprise.
How about the way Kadari Richmond, you saw him both games last, you saw him a couple of times for Seton Hall, and obviously in the NIT semifinals and championship game at his best, a triple double waiting to happen. I know you do a lot of Big 12 games, mostly for ESPN, but why do you think it took Kadari about a half a season to really figure things out? And now over the last five, six games, he's playing back to where he was at his highest level at Seton Hall. Why did it take so long, and what do you think of how far he's come?
Well, I'm from the outside looking in, so I'm not at practice every day. And I thought Shaheen Holloway did a great job with Kadari. And they're having their issues. I mean, let me just to go off on a tangent for a second. Seton Hall, the guy is, I know Shaheen Holloway is a really good coach. They're struggling this year because, as Rick Pitino said, they need more support, NIL, et cetera. But I thought Shah was able to reach Kadari in a way that Kadari really was one of the best three or four players, if not even better, in the league last year. And when I watched Kadari, I think I saw him four times in the NIT. I love his competitiveness. There was a little bit of indifference at practice and whatnot, And so when I saw he signed with St. John's, I thought, okay, this will be interesting because Rick's going to be relentless. Kadari was a little bit, let's say, low key, if you will. But now that Kadari has hit stride, I'm sure they've come to a meeting of the minds about this is how you can do it. And Kadari's bought in, and his talent level has just been, Rick's got even more out of his talent level than Shah did. And Shah did an amazing job with Kadari. So I would guess from the outside looking in, they do pay me to be an analyst, right? That may. Maybe it was an adjustment for Kadari because of the relentlessness of Rick Pitino.
Okay, yeah, I think that's fair. And Look, not every player is going to be able to go into a new system. I don't care what sport you're talking about, basketball, football, there's an adjustment period. Plus, you have a new voice and a
That's
different
right.
voice, and just trying to learn, their nuances, what they want versus the voice that's been in your head for 3 years. That's fair, coach. Listen,
Yeah.
you're a New York guy. I want to talk about what it means to New York City to have St. John's be so good and take this city over again.
All you gotta do is look at Madison Square Garden. You know what I mean? The last few home games, and you and I were discussing this off the air. My second year at St. John's, we started out the Big East 0-3, and I was concerned. Certainly, St. John's fans were concerned. And then we ripped off 12 out of 13. We lost a game at the Garden that we really were the better team. Notre Dame beat us in the Garden, but we won 12 out of 13 that stretch with Felipe Zenden and a young Ron Artest, and the city was magical. And then we had this incredible, one of the great Big East games of all time, where we lost in overtime in the semifinal to Syracuse. And in fact, just I'm reminiscing a little bit. Hear me out. I remember we went to UConn after being 0-3. We went to UConn the final game of the regular season and played for the regular season title, which was unheard of 2 months earlier because we were 0-3. And I could just remember the magic of New York, and on the occasion that I snuck into Manhattan for a meeting or a dinner or something during that 2 month run, people would stop me on the street. And I'm certainly not as visible as Rick Pitino. I mean, not even close. So I can only imagine from a distance what that's like right now because of the incredible history of the program, Louis and Mullen and Walter Berry, and then Mark Jackson, and then our little era with the guys I recruited for that 2 or 3 year period with Bootsy Thornton and those guys. So incredible to see because of the basketball is the fabric of New York City. St. John's has been a part of that fabric with the Knicks. And even for me as a fan from a distance, it's cool.
Yeah, it's very cool, because everybody loves a winner, especially New York. When you win, boy, do they
Hey,
enjoy you.
but let me tell you, winning with grittiness. You know what I mean? Winning with this kind of like the effort these kids are putting out on the court. And my guys played really hard. When we got into that little role that year in 97, 98, I mean, we left it all out there. We didn't have KenPom numbers back then, but my point is what they're doing right now, it's one thing to love watching the Knicks. I mean, the Knicks, see, there we go. Watching St. John's play if they're scoring 110. But winning with toughness and grittiness is kind of that fabric of the city that we all grew up with.
What is the potential of a team like this that shoots free throws poorly,
Yep.
can shoot threes but doesn't shoot them well,
Right.
and relies so much on defense and grittiness and heart and let's face it, coach, big time second halves. This is a second half basketball team. How
Yeah.
far can a team like this go? What is their potential?
I mean, honestly, I'm not going to predict the Final Four, but if you told me 6 weeks from now, probably the end of March would be the regional final that St. John's was going to the Final Four, that would not be a shock. Coach Pitino is he remind he and Tom Izzo have a couple things, one thing in common. Their teams rarely underachieve in the postseason. Okay. They've both taken teams way further in the tournament than anybody expected, in part because they just know how to manage that kind of atmosphere. You know what I mean? Two games in a weekend, preparation, rest. Right now, they're one of the top 10 teams in the country. So, I think there's an elite group of Alabama, Auburn, Florida, Duke, Houston. Those five kind of jump out at me as like they're a little better than the other teams in that top 15 range, Sweet 16 range. But absolutely, St. John's is capable of going deep in the tournament because they have a coach that's been there so many times in so many different situations. Providence, Kentucky, Louisville, took Iona to the tournament a couple times. So, he and Tom Izzo have that magical quality of having a team play well in March.
So you put out a tweet. That's a very good comparison, by the way, to Izzo. the way
Well, that's
his
why you have me on, Brian. Come
That's a great comparison.
on.
So here you go, Coach. You put out a tweet, I remember,
Yeah.
from a few weeks back, that took us back to nine. You said 1978. You
Yes.
snuck into a Rick Pitino practice. We're talking 1978.
I know. It's
All right.
crazy.
And he's at
Crazy.
Boston University. What happened that day?
Well, it's funny. Glenn Consor, who's now one of the, he's a TV guy for the Washington Wizards. And Glenn's from Queens. He played at Boston University. One of my best girlfriends in high school was dated Glenn for a while, and we worked camp up in the Catskills. And so two or three of us drove up in September of 78 to go see Glenn. But we also were going up. It was the week after the Boston Massacre, where the Yankees swept the Red Sox in four straight. I think the Yankees were down four. They were 14 games back in the standings that summer. I'm a
Yeah,
Mets
I
fan.
don't recall that too well. Your memory's better than mine, but yeah, keep going.
No. So anyway,
Boston
so yeah, the
Massacre.
Yankees were down like 14. They were back 14 games in the games back of the Sox. Came back, Boston Massacre, late September. We went up to see Glenn and hang out with him, and then we went to a. I remember we went to a Red Sox Orioles game, but I knew I was going to be a basketball coach. I was a junior at Brooklyn College, I think, and I and he said, "Hey, you know what? We got a, our gym is like a high school gym. We got a lot going on. If you want to sneak in, you can. You know, you might be able to watch us condition and work out." And I did, and like. This was a 26-year-old new head coach, and he was maniacal. Maniacal is an understatement as far as the work ethic. He doesn't even notice because, like I said, we haven't talked about it. We're not very close necessarily, but I was blown away. And so I followed Rick, you know, ever since. And then I was lucky enough in 1980 to start my college coaching career. And then, you know, like the common thread I told you that we had was Providence College. Because Rick left in 87. I got to Providence in 89 with Rick Barnes, and we still had some of those players left over, you know, Paco Skrine, Eric Murdoch, Marty Conlon, Abdul Shamsuddin. So, you know, I had that connection, but five-star camps, speaking engagements, coaching clinics, and then TV doing some of his games at Louisville. I've obviously followed Rick, and I'm a connoisseur of great coaching. You know, I mean, I live, eat, sleep, drink basketball every day of my life. So I'm always throwing on the Synergy video to see what, you know, St. John's is doing. And I want to go see that Bobby Walsh out of bounds play that Rick gave him credit for the other night, the UConn game. So, you know, we go back a long way, even though he doesn't know it.
Yeah, and you said you followed in his footsteps there. You know, those, you know, 89, 90 St. John's teams, you know, very good. Jason Williams, I recall, Boo
Yeah.
Harvey. You know, they had very Felipe Lopez was coming in there at some point, you know, in the early 90s, Zendon Hamilton. You know, again, those teams, you know, were still endeared by
Yeah.
St. John, by New York City fans.
But remember this, I grew up in Brooklyn. I mean, I was going to St. John's games in the late 70s as a college kid. You know, I can remember seeing Ernie DiGregorio, who was my idol growing up, great Providence, you know, NBA Rookie of the Year. But I saw a ton of games at Alumni Hall. And I never thought I was going to be the coach at St. John's, by the way, you know, but that's what we did back then. Those of us who love the game, you know, we'd go see. I saw Rick's teams. I distinctly remember Rick's team in the late 70s, my friendship with Glenn playing at St. Francis of Brooklyn when they had a program, believe it or not. So
Right.
I followed Rick for a very long time because, you know, he's Italian, he's energetic. I was that way. You know, so I wouldn't say he's my idol, but you know, there's a lot about him that I always admired because of my background growing up in the New York area, being a little Italian guy, you know, Louis, Valvano, me, you know, kind of I liked being in that ilk a little bit.
Yeah, Raleigh. It's just
Yeah.
I'm with you. I'm with you on that.
Passion. Yeah, passion.
Lot of great coaches. And where do you put, okay, if we where we start, you know, people talk about Mount Rushmore. So that means
Yes.
four. So
Ooh, yeah.
I'm even gonna take Coach Wooden and
Yeah.
you know from that era and you know Iba, right?
Yeah.
Guys like that. I'm gonna remove them from the equation, just say, you know, from 19 75 on, the modern, more modern era for our
Yeah.
listeners. Give me
Yeah.
four coaches that you put there. And is Rick on one of those?
He's close. He's close. I mean, you got to go Coach K. I go Dean Smith. Coach Smith really impacted coaching, and so, and Coach Smith would be there. Coach Knight's there because of what he accomplished. Again, they're all different and they're different personalities. And then after that, I mean, I think Rick Pitino is certainly, I would say, let's go big picture, including Mr. Iba and John Wooden. Rick is definitely in the top 10 coaches of all time. Now you can argue it's like players. It's just now you're getting me to now you're getting me to do the Jordan LeBron thing and Kobe thing here. But
Sure. Well,
in
we're in
all
the
seriousness,
college, we're in the college,
yeah.
mess hall, college,
Well,
campus, and
if
you and I are
you
talking.
and I, yeah, if you and I argued about, you said Rick is top five, and I said no, he's top seven. I might say he's top five. You might say, well, I don't know if he's better than, Bob Knight. Great. That means he's one of the great coaches of all time because of, that's just like comparing Babe Ruth and Henry Aaron, So I would say comfortably Rick Pitino is one of the top 10 coaches of all time. That's over 100 years. And in the modern era, I would say top five. If you say 75 on, I think given what he's done at various places, you easily, if you were his defense attorney, you could make a great argument for him being one of the top five of all time.
And we're not even,
In
listen, the Celtics, I'm a Celtics fan, I'm a Red Sox fan. That's why I wanted to move past that Boston massacre. But, they had, it still hurts me as a Celtics fan, right? The year Tim Duncan came out, the Celtics had the highest percentage of ping pong balls that year. They had two picks, and they ended up getting Chauncey Billups, who was a, very good NBA player, and Ron Mercer. Instead of getting the number one overall pick in Tim Duncan, and the rest is history. So the Celtics years were kind of tough. The Knicks years were very good. If this guy stays in college, if he stays in college at one place or two places, he might have five, six, seven NCAA championships.
It's a good point because I would always say that if you take the years he was in the NBA, I bet he'd average 28 wins a year in those years that he was not in college, right? So just whatever he's got win-wise in college, just add that times 28. And that would be conservative because, there's going to be a year he wins 32 at a Kentucky or a place like that. So what I've learned is this. I don't think people really, maybe like ego-wise, not saying he doesn't have a big ego, but we all know how many games he would win, and maybe he'd have more than Coach K, but who really cares? At the end of the day, he's in that pantheon, and he's close to being on that Mount Rushmore. So that, I mean, we could, that would be a whole hour-long discussion.
No, I think it's great. I would put him, for that fourth spot, me personally. I think you nailed the three. To me, you nailed the three with Smith, Krzyzewski, and Knight. He could be there. You could put Calhoun there, considering what he did, making
That's what I mean.
on
See,
what it
that's
is, Williams, right? So he's right there, and
That's
shuffle anyone in there, and I'm with you. But how about now? All right, you talked about Rick Pitino in 1978 being 26, and I don't know, I'm not good at math right now, but that puts him, I think he's 73 or so right now, whatever it is. I mean, the fact that he's
That's
doing it
46.
with passion, how impressive is that?
Well, you know what? It's impressive. First of all, he's highly competitive, from what I know of Rick, and he's got a passion for basketball. Like, I'll give you an example. Because I wouldn't compare myself from a coaching standpoint to Rick, and would not even close. But in 1969, 70, as a 12-year-old, I fell in love with the New York Knicks. Okay, that great Knicks team, right, that won the title. Rick's probably, I don't know, 7 years older than me. I don't even know. I'm thinking that I'm 66, but I've been around basketball every day of my life since that team. Whether it's playing pickup in the park, knowing I was going to coach, work in camp, then coaching, then broadcasting. Basketball's my life. Now, not to the extent that it was his life because he's still competitive and the coaching, but he's got a passion and a little basketball that I can relate to because this is all I ever knew. Like I've been in like him. I would say if you asked him, he's never had a job. Okay. I mean, this is not a job. Coaching and broadcasting is not a job if you're around something you love like basketball. So the fact that he has that passion, I can relate to because since I was 12 years old, this is all I ever wanted to do was either coach and then not realizing broadcasting would be early in my career. So I'm not surprised because he keeps himself in great shape. He's a fitness fanatic, highly competitive, and has an incredible joy and love for the game and teaching the game. You know, that's even more impressive that he's taken kids from different eras and coaching has changed dramatically through the years at the college level. And he's got the same passion. So that's impressive that he's not, you know, down in Miami playing golf and going to the track full time. You know what I mean? Full time. That he actually could put 4 or 5, 6 months in on his other passion, which is obviously the game of basketball.
No, it's an amazing job. It's an amazing story. And the fact that they're here, I'm sure guys in that locker room aren't surprised by this. But you know, when they in they're coming off to me their most impressive week of the season, right? You beat Marquette at home, who was in first place with you, and you take care of them at home. But then to go into UConn on a Friday night, 8 p.m. prime time on Fox, they're down 14, right? That's the fourth time this year, coach, that they've been down double digits in the first half and have come back to win. If that's not resilient, if that's not New York, you know, get knocked down, pick yourself back up. I don't know what.
Perfect, perfectly perfect description, Brian. Honestly, when you were talking about second half comebacks, all I could think of was I can only imagine the amount. Going back to 1978 when they were holding the bricks, literally, they were doing the defensive slides with the bricks taped. Okay.
Wait, like crab walks, like what?
Defensive slides with bricks in their hands. This is true, and everybody knows this. They taped the bricks so that when they hit the floor, they wouldn't, you know, ruin the wood floor. And they did defensive slides with bricks, right? And I saw it, and you know it's common knowledge that he did that a lot. Now it's called the overload theory, right? Make the drill tougher than the game. But when you talk about second half comebacks, I mean that's Rick Pitino. The conditioning, the mental toughness that those kids get every day in practice. And again, I'm not there, I'm not watching, but I know because I know enough people that played for him. That my buddy Glenn Consor, after a 10 turnover performance at Boston U that first year, he made him run the track at Nickerson Field in like 20 degree weather after the game. And then he forgot about him. And the coach, like an hour later, said, "Hey, Glenn's still running. Get him inside." That's the stuff.
One of those keep running until I tell you to stop.
You know, you get arrested for that nowadays or sued, but. And again, I'm half joking about it because, but that's the kind of relentless pursuit of excellence that he had, even for his players. That if you talk to Glenn today, and he did follow up on my tweet the other day, and he said he made me a better player and a better man, right? And so, what else can you say? You know, it reminds me, and I want to get a story on Zenden Hamilton in real quick.
Please
I'm
do.
relentless myself, as you probably heard, okay? And I was very tough on Zenden and Felipe, particularly because they had so little success, unfortunately, for a couple of years. You know, not everybody, not nobody's fault, just didn't work out. And I remember after Zenden got done in the NBA, I said, "Man, the first time I see him, I got to apologize to him because I was so tough on him." You know, and we've become very close nowadays. I texted with Zenden the other day, and I said, "The first time I see Zenden, I got to apologize." And so I see him at the NBA Summer League, and he's coming walking towards me. And he's got a big smile. And I said, "Z, hold it, hold it. I owe you an apology. For what? I was really tough on you." And he goes, "Coach, you're the reason I drive a Range Rover." And I said, "Okay, I get it." So, you know, this relentless pursuit of excellence by Rick is not, it's just him. It's just him.
Great stuff. Coach Fran Fraschilla, catch him on ESPN, does a lot of Big 12 games. Coach, I cannot thank you enough for taking time out of your Super Bowl Sunday to speak with us here on the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Great stuff.
Happy to do it, Brian.
Man, I love hearing Coach Fraschilla's stories. Are you kidding me? They used to tape bricks to feet. Hey, different time, different era. I mean, if you're in your 50s or 60s, you've heard stories, you've gone through practices like that. And just, you did it. You did what the coaches told you to do, and you didn't think twice, and you never questioned authority. You did it because they told you to do it, and you wanted to play. Different time, different era, but think about Coach Pitino, right? 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, 2000 teens, 2020s. That's six different decades. And he shows no signs of slowing down anytime soon. So, what do the Johnnies have this week? Doesn't get any easier. At Villanova, they go to the main line, Finneran Pavilion, and then a first place showdown at Madison Square Garden with Creighton, the revenge game, as the Johnnies try to get even with the Blue Jays, who handed them their only loss in Big East play up to this point. So, St. John's had a great week. UConn played one game, one game. They had 1 week to prepare for St. John's, and the Huskies in that game came out on fire, jumped out to a big lead. I thought that they established control of that game. Solo Ball was hitting shots left and right, and knowing what you know about St. John's, the game was far from over because you knew there was still the second half to be played. You knew there was still another half of the first half. And what you saw was a UConn team cave to the pressure. This UConn team is very uncharacteristic because, number one, I love their bigs. I really like Terrace Reed Jr. a lot, but there's no enforcer. And I've talked about this. There's no Adama Sanogo. There's no Donovan Clingan. There's certainly no Emeka Okafor, right? You see where I'm going with this. So you lack an enforcer inside, and you lack a killer instinct, and you lack toughness, you lack grittiness. Hassan Diarra, who's essentially their only ball handler left on the roster, because of injuries, illnesses, and he wasn't 100%. He's battling illness, and there really wasn't a quality, capable ball handler. A lot of uncharacteristic turnovers, a lot of passes that you were just like, where are they throwing the ball? Now, a lot of that's St. John's, but 22 turnovers. It's very un-UConn-like. And even though they beat Marquette in the game before, they had 25 turnovers in that game. So you're talking 47 turnovers in two games. That's not a recipe for success. Second half was really tough on the Huskies. Solo Ball didn't score a point after halftime. 0 for 3 from the field after going 5 of 9 in the first half with 13 points. 0 points. Goose egg. Alex Caraban, where have you gone? Alex Caraban has been MIA. His 3-point shot is clearly lost. Last six games, 0 for 3, 2 for 6, 1 for 6, 0 for 6, 1 for 5, 0 for 5. That is not Alex Caraban. Now, I would say it's a slump, but when it goes for 3.5 weeks, 3 weeks, six games, something's not right. His mechanics, I'm sure it's mental. Earlier this year, at an 0 for 7 game against Gonzaga, this is a guy who was first team All Big East preseason. Every coach who comes in praises him, but he cannot find a shot right now. So somehow, some way, UConn has to get Caravan going. Dan Hurley has to get his confidence back if they have any hopes of challenging St. John's, challenging Creighton and Marquette for the Big East title. If not, UConn is trending down. Now listen, to Caravan's credit, he's still getting rebounds. He's still getting assists. He's still doing things that make him a leader and a captain. But it's clearly affecting his mind and his game. Welcome back, Liam McNeely. A sight for sore eyes. You know, I'm not going to criticize Liam McNeely. I thought he forced things early on and then kind of settled into the game. Took a lot of shots first game back, but it just goes to show you that he's a special, special freshman. And he's an NBA talent. We know that. He's a first round pick. We know that. Didn't shoot the ball well. I didn't think he played particularly well, but he wanted the ball. He wanted shots. And he finished with 18 and 11, if you can believe that. But again, UConn didn't get the stops when they needed to. They cut it to two late in the game. St. John's had the ball out of bounds underneath their own hoop. They ran a magnificent out-of-bounds play for R.J. Lewis, who came around a screen and then did a half circle and circled back and had a wide-open 15-foot baseline jumper. And that essentially put the game away, put St. John's up four. UConn, there's something missing from this team. Like I said, grittiness, toughness, really killer instinct. And I don't know how they get it and just turn it on. So it's just one of those years for UConn. All right. A three-peat is not even in the equation right now. Can this team get hot and get cooking in March? Sure. But they have a long way to go before we start talking about that. Because right now, they are the fourth best team in the Big East. To me, they're a one-win team in the NCAA tournament at best. So a lot to be played. McNeely needs to get his legs under him. Caravan needs to get his shot back. Diarra needs to get healthy. And then we'll see if this team can start to get going. But it's going to have to be as they open up against Creighton. And that is not going to be an easy game on Tuesday by any stretch of the matter. All right, now let's move to Rutgers. This is a team that, look, they're snake bitten in a way. All right. This is not to make an excuse, but this team, as we stand heading into Valentine's Day week, is 12-12 and 5-8 in the Big Ten. You are what your record says you are, but you cannot completely tell the story of this Rutgers team in 24-25 without mentioning the injuries and the illnesses. And I know every team deals with them, okay? But the fact of the matter is this team has played less than half of its Big Ten games with a full, healthy complement of players. Whether it's Dylan Harper dealing with injuries or the flu, whether it's Jeremiah Williams dealing with the flu and throwing up and losing 12 pounds, whether it's Ace Bailey dealing with an injury preseason and then again with the flu. I mean, how many guys on this team are going to get the flu? So they're trying to give it a go, but clearly they're not at full strength. And when you're playing a Maryland team, who I believe is very good, in their home building, and you don't have one of your big two, meaning Dylan Harper or Ace Bailey, I mean, you're better off just packing it in. It is nearly impossible to win these Big Ten road games, right? Indiana, at Indiana, I believe Rutgers wins that game if they have Dylan Harper. This game at Maryland, I'm not saying they beat Maryland because I love this Maryland team. Really think that Willard has his best team yet at Maryland. But if they have Ace Bailey, there's no question the score is a lot different. But look, you can't give up 90 points in a Big Ten game or any game and expect to win. All right. Rutgers continues to not defend well. Maryland hit 10 threes in this game. Their guards are very good. All right. Their bigs are very good. Derek Queen is, outside of Cooper Flagg, he might be the second best freshman in the country. And he might be the Big Ten freshman of the year, with all due respect to Ace Bailey and Dylan Harper. All right. Derek Queen put up numbers that we haven't seen in years from a freshman. 29 points, 15 rebounds, and 5 assists. An absolute beast. A 5-star talent that played like an NBA lottery pick. And when you have guys like Jacoby Gillespie hitting threes, and you have Rodney Rice hitting threes, and you have Selton Miguel hitting threes, and from deep, 26, 27, 28 feet, and you don't adjust to that, they're going to make you pay. Because between those two guards, they hit all 10 of Maryland's threes. So Rutgers had no answers. Again, the inconsistencies from the rest of the team. One night, Jeremiah Williams has a great game against Illinois, and the next game, he fouls out with 4 points. Jordan Durkak, not sure if you saw the stats, but he hasn't hit a field goal in 5 games. That's 4 straight games. He doesn't have one field goal, all free throws. Jamichael Davis has a career game against Michigan and then comes back. He gets 3 points and 1 for 6. Tyson Acuff, 3 minutes, no points. I mean, the ups and downs of this bench, there's no consistency whatsoever. You can't sustain any success. Okay. Dylan Grant, my goodness, there's a game. 19 points, 8 rebounds from the freshman, showing you what he can do against great competition. But outside of, can he do that again? Sure, but the freshmen, they go up and down. Look, this team, I keep hearing Rutgers fans, whether it's on social media or friends of mine, well, they can get hot and they can win 6 of their last 7 games. Sure. And you know what? They can also lose every road game and go 0-4 on the road and win 3 home games. It's just asking for a lot from this team. All right. Number one, they have to get healthy. Injuries, illnesses, get rid of this flu, and just win the next game. Beat Iowa. Because that's a team that's owned them of late, and that's a team they should win. Iowa's down. Rutgers needs to make a statement game at home, because they have very tough away games. They're at Purdue, they're at Michigan, that West Coast trip at Oregon and Washington. You think they can win both of those games? You think they can go 3,000 miles away and win both of those, this team, the way they're playing right now? Look, USC isn't a gimme at home. Their only path, I'm not Brad Wachtel, I'm not a bracketologist, but I'm just telling you what I see. I'm being a realist about this. Just get healthy in March and try to go on a run in the Big Ten tournament. As highly unlikely as that is their only path I see, winning the Big Ten tournament title. But you have to get more out of your support players. You have to get more consistency, because without that, And if you're missing either one of Ace Bailey and Dylan Harper, you got no shot. So this season is quickly becoming and evolving into the most disappointing season in Rutgers history. And it comes down to this: unless they make the Big East tournament, unless, well, I guess I'm Gus Johnson now, confusing the Big Ten and the Big East, right? Unless they win the Big Ten tournament, this team is not getting an at-large bid. That you can book. They need to win the Big Ten tournament at this point. All right, speaking of wins, Yale has a stranglehold on the Ivy League. They go up to Cornell and they put a beating on the Big Red. And it was the trio, just like we saw against Princeton, the trio of John Pulakidas, Nick Townsend, and Bez Mbang, the big three. John Pulakidas, named the Ivy League Player of the Week, had a career high 32 points. If that wasn't big enough, hitting one big shot after another, Bez Mbang recorded the second triple double in program history. We're talking about a player who does special things on the defensive end. We know he's an elite defensive player, but now he's doing it on the offensive end as well. So you get Mbang doing that. You get Nick Townsend throwing in what he did with 25 points, and the rout was on 103 to 88. Eight straight wins for the Bulldogs. They lead Princeton and they lead Cornell by 2 games. They hold the tiebreaker because they've beaten both. And this team has clearly established itself as the team to beat in the Ivy League. Townsend has been magnificent all year. You're talking about, and you can't put them all on first team, all Ivy League. But look, I wouldn't be surprised if you see Townsend and Pulakidas making first team all Ivy League and Mbang on second team and earning big, Ivy League Defensive Player of the Year. You know how I feel about this team. They're big, they're long, they're strong, they can shoot. And these Ivy League teams, man, they're not playing games in the 60s, in the 70s. Yale is scoring 100 points in a game. And you're doing it against a Cornell team that can defend in their building. So this team can play at any pace. And it's impressive what they're doing. James Jones has this team cooking right now. And find me a better team. You do not want to play this team in the NCAA tournament. I know they have to play in the Ivy League tournament, but what they're doing right now is really impressive. And they don't have Matt Noling. They don't have Danny Wolf, right? Neither player's playing there. So imagine if they had them this year. You put Danny Wolf on this team, what he's doing for Michigan. And yeah, sign them up for the Sweet 16. That's how good they would be. So that's how good a job James Jones has done. Danny Wolf is a first round NBA draft pick. Matt Noling hit the game-winning shot in the final seconds at the buzzer to help Yale beat Brown last year in the championship game and get to the NCAA tournament and then beat Auburn. So you're losing two of your top players, two starters, and all this team does is reload. And all this team does is win at Princeton and win at Yale. Excuse me, at Princeton and at Cornell. And then Bezembang throws up a triple-double. So look out. 7-0 in the Ivy League, 14-6 overall. They play Princeton and Penn this week. I think they have Penn on Valentine's Day, and then Princeton on Saturday, coming to Yale, and win both of those and just give them the league title. All right. Princeton, we'll see if they can rebound. We'll see if they have learned from their mistakes. We'll see if they can get tougher and grittier, or we'll see if Yale will bully them again the second time this year. Bula Bula Bulldogs are just, forget about their bark. They have bite, they have everything. All right. Let's go to the MAC, and two teams I want to talk about there, Sacred Heart and Iona. The hottest team, let's start there, is Sacred Heart. For the first time ever, Sacred Heart has defeated its Fairfield rival and beat Fairfield University. The Stags were 10-0 against the Pios all time. 10-0, make them 10-1. What a game. What a win for Anthony Latina and company. Tanner Thomas is doing great things, playing like a first team all MAC selection. Had a real nice game with 14 points and 10 rebounds. But the story were the freshmen. Mekhi Connor, you've heard me talk about him on this podcast. He earns the Rookie of the Week again in the MAC conference, his second Rookie of the Week award. The kid averaged 16 points, 5 assists, and 4 rebounds. He hit for 20 points in the win over Fairfield, including the three-pointer with 44 seconds left that essentially put the game out of the reach and were the game-winning points. For a freshman, this kid has onions. Local kid who has really come into his own from Notre Dame West Haven. All right. Notre Dame West Haven has become one of the best high school programs in the state of Connecticut, along with East Catholic. They're producing Division I players left and right, and they have a lot of talent. And Mekhi Connor is the latest to come out of there. He's strong. He's a pure point guard. Every game, this guy is dishing out 7, 8, 9 assists. You've heard me talk about him. He's had games of 16 assists and 14 assists. He had 20 points in that game, like I said. And the other story in that game was the other freshman who's really, really come into his own, Niall Ralph Bayer. And he's a kid from Westchester, Pennsylvania, who tied his career high with 20 points in this game, who is long and lean. And I don't know if Sacred Heart's going to be able to keep either of those players next year, because in an era of NIL, both players are really trending up. And this is a kid who can hit it from outside. He can score from inside. And his last 5 games, Ralph Byers scored in double figures in 4 of those 5 games, 20, 16, 16, and 12. Shooting 46% from three on the season. So they're the hottest team in the MAC. They have climbed up into fifth place in the conference, right behind Iona. Anthony Latina has this team playing great basketball. The Pios have won 5 straight games for the first time in 8 years. You have to go back to 2017. So look out for them, right? Merrimack has taken over first place in this topsy-turvy league. 1 week it's Marist, the next week it's Quinnipiac, now it's Merrimack, but lurking in the shadows is another hot team. Iona, Tobin Anderson has the Gaels climbing in conference play. But what a week it was for the Gaels. Their best week of the season, going to Mount St. Mary's and shocking the Mount on a last second buzzer-beating three by DeJour Reeves. All right. RJ Lewis is my Tri-State College Basketball Player of the Week. I should have mentioned it earlier. RJ, when St. John's beat Marquette and UConn, he averaged 19 points, 9 rebounds, and 2 steals a game. Well, if not for him, RJ Lewis, Dejure Reeves would have been my Tri-State College Basketball Player of the Week because he beats Mount St. Mary's at the buzzer with a three in overtime. And then they follow up that with a gritty win at Marist, knocking off the Red Foxes. And Reeves follows that up with 24 points in 33 minutes. The freshman Adam Engi, who might end up being the MAC freshman of the year, he goes for 20, and they knock off a defensive-minded Marist team, one of the best defensive teams in the conference, and they score 75 points. They've won three straight, five, six of seven, and two on the road last week. Very, very impressive. This team struggled early on in the year, and the mark of Tobin Anderson's teams, they get better as the season goes on. They get better as the season goes on. Because in the beginning of the year, I heard Iona fans complaining, oh, this isn't our year. Maybe Tobin Anderson isn't the right coach for this program. They start the year and they lose the opener at Sacred Heart, not even competitive. And then after that, it was just a series of losses. Losing to Harvard at home, losing to Marist at home, losing a nail biter to Siena. Then they lose at Fairfield and Quinnipiac. And this team was down. They started out 2-4 in conference play. And then something clicked. They started to get going. They started to string together wins. They started to get confidence. And 2-4 becomes 8-5. But really, what you want this team to start doing is winning games in New Rochelle. Because when the Gales are going, that is one of the best, if not the best, home court atmospheres in all of the MAC. And it hasn't been there this year. We saw them lose at home to Marist. We saw them lose at home to Quinnipiac. Well, there are home games coming up. Rider, Manhattan, Merrimack. That is their only game against Merrimack this season. And Iona gets them at home. That's a game I would circle if I'm an Iona fan. Sunday, February 23rd. All right. Before then, they're home to Rider, home to Manhattan, at Quinnipiac. Win your home games. Maybe somehow you shock Quinnipiac on the road. And suddenly, you're putting yourself in contention for top two, top three. Win 6 out of 7 to end the year. And you finish 14-6 in conference play. That's a pretty damn good season. That puts your team in contention in the MAC and rightfully so in Atlantic City. So this team is really starting to gel under Tobin Anderson. They're starting to play their best basketball of the season. And like I said, it's a team that you don't want to play right now because they have a legitimate first team all MAC player. They have an A-level player in Dejure Reeves. They have an A-level freshman in Adam Engi. They have a big man in Yafet Mundi who's very skilled and goes after rebound after rebound, like his lunch meal depends on it. they have balance all over the place. So, and they come at you for 40 minutes. So, right now, Sacred Heart, Iona, and Merrimack are the hottest teams in the conference. And we're going to see, we're going to get a good glimpse over the next 2 weeks where those teams stand in conference play. So keep your eye on the MAC. Keep your eye on these teams. Don't give up on Quinnipiac. Don't give up on Marist. This conference, you look at the standings and you look at these teams. And I honestly believe that any one of five, six teams can win this conference tournament and get to the NCAAs. That's how wide open it is. And Iona is right there amongst those teams. So that'll do it for this edition of the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. My thanks to Fran Fraschilla, and my thanks to you for listening and downloading and sharing the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Until next time, everyone, my name is Brian DeNovellis. Enjoy the games, everyone, and happy Valentine's Day. So long.